This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Social Justice, a Conversation. I'm Charles Stanton, along here with my partner, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And we're going to start our show tonight with a couple of positive developments.
Yay.
Because many times in this show, we are sort of the bearers of bad news. And that is not done intentionally, but it is to accurately, I guess, depict a lot of the things that are going on in our society.
Mm-hmm.
But the couple of good things we wanted to talk about first was the fact that Sweden has finally been brought into NATO after a long process where Turkey had been opposing the inclusion of Sweden. And now, along with the earlier acceptance of Finland, now we know that NATO has 32 countries.
Yay.
And I think that it poses a very powerful deterrent,
mm-hmm,
to hopefully any further invasions of any other European country. Though I would add the qualifier, you never know with the man who's running Russia as to what actually he would do. But
yeah.
I think it is a deterrent. I think the interesting thing now is, of course, whether our Congress is going to aid the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And this has gone on for a number of weeks.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, it's nice that Sweden has joined because now it makes up for the lack of our support,
mm-hmm,
like, coming from America. Yeah. And now how, like, wishy-washy we seem is really, it's not good look for us as people who are in, like, the who are included in NATO.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think the vast majority of Americans and the vast majority of the Congress are for giving this money to the Ukraine.
Yeah.
The problem is that you have a faction in the Congress who are listening to the ex-president and will obey his every command, and, you know, We are a democracy,
mm-hmm,
and as a democracy is basically, we do democratic things, and one of the democratic things we do is vote, and we have a Congress that's supposed to represent all of us, and they are supposed to hopefully enact the wishes of the people. And if this bill to aid Ukraine was voted down, if there were more people in the Congress and the House of Representatives who did not want the aid to the Ukraine, then that would be an example of our democracy at work. There was,
mm-hmm,
a vote, and we had a vote, and the people who opposed it had more votes than the people who wanted it.
Yeah.
But the problem is that we don't have that situation. In the case of the aid to the Ukraine, in the case of the immigration bill,
mm-hmm,
and also now overriding everything is whether or not the government's going to shut down, or whether we'll be able to in some way put that off, again, not allowing a vote to be had. Now, this is, to me, completely undemocratic, and I don't understand why the Democratic Party particularly isn't hitting this much harder.
Yeah, that's what I'm confused about too. Like, why are they, like, it's like they're kind of like cowering in fear or something.
Mm. Well, I don't know. We've talked about the president before.
Yeah.
And the president, you know, he's very, I use the word intermittent.
Mm.
like he'll go on this, he'll go on a show, he'll go on a talk show, he'll go on what have you, an interview or something like that. And he's very good. He gets the point out. He does all the rest of the stuff. But then it's like he disappears.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him for a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. The only way to fight to fight anything that's anti-democratic is to be just as strong and as vigilant and as consistently pro-democratic.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, then obviously you're playing into the hands of these people, because these people are at it basically every day. And they're using the weapons of social media,
mm-hmm.
and all of those things to basically spread disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any doubt. I think there's very little doubt that our foreign adversaries are also participating in this attempt to create disinformation.
Yeah.
And to confuse our voters and all the rest of those things. And it's going to be an enormously challenging upcoming election.
Yeah.
To hopefully try to deliver to people what the true facts are, you know,
mm-hmm.
because this stuff is out there every day. And it's amazing when you see the interviews that MSNBC did with some of the people who were at these caucuses and conventions and everything, how many of these people actually believe that Russia is a benign presence is really like mind-boggling, though. It's like mind-boggling. Like they have no conception of what's been going on there, how Navalny was killed, and all of it.
No, it's crazy because, like, what was it? I saw this video on Twitter. It was like someone was interviewing this Trump supporter, and she was like, "Yeah, I don't see what's the problem with like Putin and Russia. Like, if anything, like we should support them." And I was like, "You're serious right now? You're serious? Like, I thought we were all about like we literally broke off from the, like we've talked about this before. We broke off from a monarchy. We don't typically we don't like the idea of dictatorship in the United States,
right.
And that idea has been that's like a very long standing idea, right?
Right.
But suddenly the news comes out that like Trump and Putin are like best friends forever or whatever. Now it's okay. It is okay for Trump to be or want to be a dictator.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like fashionable.
Yeah.
That you'd have one person basically rule the whole thing. What's interesting about it, though, is there's been a progression in his rhetoric, which you didn't see before. You didn't see it in 2016 or even in 2020, where he basically just comes out and says a lot of things that just tell you what he intends to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, a mystery or something that's, what shall we say, shocking or anything that, he's telling you exactly what the game plan is. And the people who are supporting him, I don't know, maybe they're all right with it.
I know that's something like the people I know who are Trump supporters, I know that's something that they like about him, that they like that he is upfront and honest with like his thoughts or whatever, but like, what?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I think people don't appreciate our democracy.
Yeah, they take it for granted, for sure.
I think that's a lot of the problem, that people, you know, all of the rights that we have, rights that in many parts of the world are completely unheard of,
mm-hmm.
because these governments are run by a dictatorship. You could say Russia, you could say China, you could say Iran, etc.
North Korea.
Yeah. And we are so lucky,
that we
have it, of course.
But yeah, speaking of rights, apparently in Alabama, embryos have more rights than I do.
Yeah. Well, here we go again. And again, it's It's the old story, that you know, hiding behind religion and all the rest of this stuff. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It has nothing to do with protecting the child. It has nothing to do with child protection.
Mm-hmm.
Because if our country was as dedicated to child protection as it's supposed to be, we wouldn't have the massive child abuse that we have.
Okay. And the guns.
And the guns.
And the guns.
And the guns, of course. But you know, I think in this case, though, I think that even a lot of the Republicans realize they've gone too far, though.
Yeah.
There's been a big negative reaction to it.
Yeah.
You know, but it was interesting. It was interesting to see how fast they backed away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it affects so many people, though. It's really, it's very, very cynical when you think about it, because these are people who were trying to have a child. So how would you impute to them any malevolent feelings? It doesn't make any sense. They couldn't have the child that they were trying through this process. Okay, the process in some cases doesn't work out. But there's a big step from saying it didn't work out for whatever reason, and then basically saying that they were committing murder or something. I mean, that's like insane, though.
Yeah, I think the only reason why they're stepping back now is because I think there's information that came out that there are some people like involved in like the government who are Republican who also had like IVF, like transfers and stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's like also people saying like, oh, like they don't care because it's theirs was successful. So it's like, oh, I got what I want. I don't really care what happens to you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a procedure for people who, you know, haven't been able to have a child.
Yeah.
And it's not a certainty at all.
Yeah.
But don't demean the people who are going through the process. I mean, there's some like really disturbed I don't know, ideology or something that's behind that. It's just like, in a different sense, the young girl that was killed down in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lack of like I don't know, decency or morality or whatever you want to say, that almost like in some way she deserved to be killed because she was transgender or something. Is that what they're saying? I mean, I'm just trying to understand the mentality there.
I can never understand like the mentality, because like you want to slap like, oh, this is what the Bible says, whatever. No. But there are like the two like main rules are like love your neighbor as yourself, and I forget the second one, but like the big one is like love your neighbor as yourself. Like, okay, like what if they're trans?
Yeah, yeah.
Why does it matter? Like, why does it matter to you? It's not affecting you in any way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, that's it's they want to impose their what they think is their morality on everybody else. But especially in the case of children, it's very inhumane.
Yeah.
Because all these programs that have been developed to try to help people find their way, find what their identity is. It should be looked at as an act of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That they have these issues and they're trying to find that identity, and but people in the medical community, in the legal community, should be behind that. But it's not to be condemning a person because they're in that situation. I mean, it's just like disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a warped way of looking at things, and there's so much, I call it fake morality.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people, you know, they're for taking everybody's rights away from them, but they're saying, well, we're above all this, and we're doing the work of God and all this stuff. You know, like, and it's crazy. I mean, we're gonna end Obamacare because it's not the will of God, or you don't end the person who's transgendered.
Yeah,
that's the identity that they have. No more than you end, you know, gay rights or people who are lesbian or whatever it is, because as I always say, to me, religion, you know, whatever religion you are, you know, I believe that, you know, it's the same, it's a same higher power that that is above all of us.
It's the same, to me, it's like the same foundation of being, just being a good person.
Yeah, exactly. And doing good deeds.
Yeah.
Helping other people. And that's, you know, not to go off on a religious tangent, but it is, if you read the scriptures, when Christ was on earth and he was talking to the man, and he says to the man, you've given me food, you've done all these things for me, and the man was confused, and he says, but Lord, he said, I never saw you. And he says, well, did you feed the poor? Did you do all these other things? Mm-hmm. That's what it's about, basically.
That is what it's about. Oh, it's so frustrating for me.
Yeah, no, it is. But and in that vein, of course, talking about doing things for people who are doing good work. Mrs. Gottesman, who gave $1 billion gift to Albert Einstein Medical Center.
I love this story.
And she basically, her husband passed, and she. She's now a widower, but she gave all this money to the hospital to enable free tuition in perpetuity for all the medical students.
That's so, and she didn't even ask to for the school's name to be changed.
Right, exactly.
And so that's how you know it's from the good of her heart, that's honestly. It. And yeah. I love that story so much. Yeah.
Well, that's true philanthropy.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of these people. And you know, they give money, and they want this name on it and that name on it. The truest philanthropy is what she did. The truest philanthropy is just doing it out of the goodness of your heart and soul to do it, and helping other people. And you know, it's not about blowing your own horn or something like that. And it's interesting, it was an interesting story about Warren Buffett this week, which was, again, it just really interests me. Anyway, his company, they had a profit of I think it was $96 billion.
Oh, my goodness.
An enormous, enormous amount of money. Okay. You know, that he's a businessman. I got that.
Yeah.
And he has all these companies, and two of the companies, I guess, that he has are in the railway business of transporting, I guess, goods and stuff like that. And they made a profit. I mean, the both companies made a profit. One company made a profit of $2 billion. The other company made a profit of $5 billion. But anyway,
good for them, I guess.
He had an issue about it because he was complaining about the increase in the wages of the workers who were in these companies. And I'm saying to myself, well, there's nothing more that you could have. I mean, maybe there's something that I don't know about.
What?
I mean, maybe there's something else out there that maybe we should be wanting, but only he and a few other people know it. But you have all this stuff. What is the problem with these people who are getting a wage increase at a time when the costs of a lot of things have gone up, particularly food? And what was that song from the Beatles, Let It Be? just leave it alone, though.
You make billions of dollars, and you can't give an increase to your...
it's there's some dynamic there that's crazy. But that's and you know, speaking of the food industry, of course, now we see that the Federal Trade Commission is going to oppose the Kroger-Albertsons merger, which is a really big thing in this city because we have a lot of Albertsons and we have a lot of Smiths that's run by Kroger. And I have, in my lifetime and in my experience in the law and et cetera, I have never seen a beneficial merger in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the same tired story that's trotted out. Well, it's going to be more efficient. We're going to serve the public better, all the rest of these things. It never happens.
Mm-hmm.
All that happens basically is fewer stores, fewer items, more expensive prices,
huh.
Fewer workers. That's really what it comes down to. They cut down the workers, they cut down the amount of stores, and the price goes up. I mean, the prices of food are astronomical.
No, it's
astronomical.
It's crazy. Like, there is news that just came out that Wendy's wants to try, like, surge pricing. And so, like, they want to increase the price of their food during, like, busier hours.
I'm not kidding.
No, like, I'm so serious. Like, that's crazy. Like, why is the price of a burger at noon, like, more expensive than a price of a burger at 2 p.m.? Like, I don't know.
Well, the reason, you know, we sit down together every week, and, you know, there are people who have written books about this, and, you know, there are economists, and the people in the Fed are obviously all kinds. It's just greed, though.
Yeah, at the end of the day,
when you get down to it, it's like, you know, the more they have, the more they want, and they never have enough. That's basically... They're never content. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem you're seeing in the society, though.
Mm-hmm.
You see it in so many different fields. That, of course, is the one of the problems. And then, of course, you know, I don't know what went back on, you know, before I was born, but the lack of corporate responsibility is very troubling. Now, we talk about, you know, Kroger and Albertsons. Well, that's just, you know, it's what it is. It's greed. It's monopoly. It's always gone on. But it was a very interesting article they had in the Times about the FAA.
Mm-hmm.
The FAA had put together a panel to figure out why they were having so many safety problems with Boeing as the manufacturer of the planes. But as part of that now, they're also looking into adding to protections for people who work there who are reporting to the government about things that should not be happening vis-a-vis the Boeing company, basically whistleblowers. And I'm saying to myself, well, if you're working in one of these places that's evaluating the safety of the plane, I hope to God that you would be blessed to go to somebody and tell them if you saw something that was a mechanical, some kind of defect in the mm-hmm. plane, because people are going to be flying around.
Exactly. Like, it's those people's lives are in your hands.
Exactly. And the thing about it in a lot of these situations is I'm always talking about, you know, somebody, it's one of my favorite phrases, and somebody always said that the opposite of love is hate. No, the opposite of love isn't hate. The opposite of love is indifference,
mm-hmm.
that people don't care. And you have people at the top who don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the bottom line. And then the person who's the worker there, the person who's tasked with, you know, seeing that these planes are safe, they're supposed to go along with the fact that you're cutting corners or doing stuff like that. No, that's not what they're there for. They're there to see that everything is what it should be, because you're going to be carrying people. You have passengers. This is a big responsibility,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I think that the whistleblowers now are becoming more and more prevalent, and I think the reason for that is, I'm sorry to say, is the failure of our government.
Yeah.
You know, that our government, vis-a-vis, you know, its supposed investigative bodies, whether it's the FAA, the FTC, the FDA, you know, the ones that investigate you know, our buildings, safety, what have you, they're just not doing the job. I mean, I think you see almost a complete lack of involvement with social media.
Yeah.
Where, you know, okay, they bring these people to a hearing, and we go through this. It's like a play.
Everybody yeah, has it their, is like a play.
Everybody has their script, and everybody knows what they're going to say.
He's talking.
You know, but the issues are very, very, very serious.
Yeah.
You know, and they have this thing now, which we're not going to get into it this week, but hopefully next week, about the whole situation with influencers and some really, really disturbing, truly disturbing stuff that's come out. I guess it was, I'm trying to think when it was actually, last weekend in the New York Times. And we're gonna talk about it next week because it really deserves attention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the Wild West. I got a message today about regarding this program doing stuff in AI.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, come on here. It just seems like nobody is in charge. You know, and the thing about it is, though, ultimately, is all of these sites and platforms, they have the power to rule over what content is put out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, anybody can just go on whatever these sites are, whether it's TikTok or YouTube or whatever it is, and just put whatever it is that they want. That's
uh-huh.
not true. They can be screened out. They can screen it out, but they don't want to do it, though. They don't want to do it.
But I also worry that if they do start screening it out, they're going to start screening out, like, the, I would say, like, important stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, social media is how, like, at least, like, people my age, like, we get, like, messages around mm-hmm. and we get information about what's going on in
yeah,
the world.
Yeah.
So I think my only worry about like the screening processes that they're going to be hiding more like information from us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that's a legitimate concern. But the thing that we're going to talk about next week, and I really hope everybody listens to this, because it actually shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit flabbergasted to what we're going to talk about. And I'm saying to myself, wow, this is scary stuff. This is scary stuff because, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in social media.
Yeah.
You know, there's been misogyny. There's been the guy who cut the head off of his father.
Yeah.
And it was on YouTube. But this goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where the government is. I truly don't know where the government
about
is.
About to be shut down.
You know, really about to be shut down. That's a very good answer. But It really is troubling to me.
Yeah.
And I think it's an indication of where the society seems to be headed, unless we all of us raise our voices and decide to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
The wise man who said that all that allows evil to triumph is that good people do nothing, and that's the problem that you have.
Yeah.
But that's something for next week that you can all hopefully listen into. But it's been, as always, a great pleasure to talk about all these different things with my partner here. And we look forward to speaking to you again next week.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1@UNLV.nevada.edu, or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.